Hi, my name is Danielle, and you're listening to Crime and Mystery Canada. On this podcast, we discuss subjects that might be creepy to some, and sometimes even frightening. Some of our episodes will deal with serious subject matter, while others will be more lighthearted. Please keep in mind that I am not an expert on any of the topics I cover, just an interested party, and as always, listener discretion is advised. Hi, everyone, and welcome back. I'm Danielle.
I'm Paul-Emile.
And you're listening to Crime and Mystery Canada. I'd like to start tonight by saying that I hope everyone has been having a really nice holiday season. We're recording this on Boxing Day, so it's going to be a short episode so we can get back to our family and friends. But I know there's not much content coming out this week, so I thought I'd still get an episode out there so people had something to listen to. On tonight's episode, we'll be discussing the legend of the Nahanni Valley. First of all, if you're an outdoor enthusiast, please take a minute to look up Nahanni National Park. It's a gorgeous area in the Northwest Territories, and now it's on my bucket list of places to visit when we finally get to travel again, despite the fact that there's a slightly terrifying legend that comes along with it. The name Nahanni comes from the Dene people that are indigenous to the area, and it means river of the land of the Nahanni people. According to Wikipedia, some people speculate that the Nahanni people would have been ancestors to the Navajo.
So, right off the hop, it's interesting how there's all these legends that are intertwined with all the different peoples that are all over our country.
Yeah. It starts with First Nations people, but it kind of evolved from there as well. According to Photos.com, the park can only be accessed by boat or float plane, so it's very remote. It has been referred to as the Canadian Grand Canyon because of its four canyons, which are aptly named First, Second, Third, and Fourth Canyon. It has spectacular falls named Virginia Falls that are actually twice the height of Niagara Falls.
I had no idea where the park was, but I remember reading about those falls.
Oh, do you?
Yes.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of this park at all, but at this point I'd really like to visit it someday.
I'll make a decision on whether I want to visit or not after you tell us your story.
Okay, we'll check back in at the end. Because the falls are so tall, there's obviously a ton of mist coming off from where they land at the bottom. And because of this, several rare orchid species are actually growing in the area, which you wouldn't think of the Northwest Territories and orchids as going hand in hand.
No, but it's amazing when you think of it. But if the falls are that high and there's that much humidity there, they kind of create their own little ecosystem. You never know what you'll find there growing.
And not just that, but it actually contains hundreds of hot springs and something called, and I'm not sure I'm saying this correctly, but tufa mounds, which I learned today were actually deposits of minerals that are formed by these hot springs. And they take years and years and years to form. So these are actually quite rare and quite delicate.
So it would be the reverse of what you find in caves?
You mean like a stalactite?
Yeah, stalactite.
I think it's something similar, but I think it builds up more because the springs are usually sort of kind of pooling.
Right.
Because of all this, there's a great diversity of flora and fauna that you'd probably never get to observe anywhere else. And also, it's home to many endangered species like the wood bison, the woodland caribou, and the wolverine, just to name a few. According to the National Parks Project, Episode 5, the park is nearly the size of Switzerland.
It's amazing.
It's a very vast area. And as a side note, if you're a national park enthusiast, I just discovered that series on YouTube called The National Park Projects. And it does highlight a park in each province or territory in Canada. I've only watched the one on the Nahanni Park, but it was really good. The park was established in 1972 by Pierre-Éliott Trudeau. I didn't look into the details of the park being formed, but I did read that in 2000 there was an agreement between the government and the First Nations people of the area to help protect and develop the park. It's considered a World Heritage Site by UNESCO, And only about 800 to 1,000 people visit the park every year, more than likely because of how remote it is. In 2007, it was voted one of the Seven Wonders of Canada in a competition that was hosted by the CBC.
It's amazing. I've barely heard of the place.
Nor had I. I'd never... I guess it's... We probably don't pay enough attention to the territories, because to us it's just so remote, like when will you ever get there? But I feel like it's one of those places we should actually make an effort, if it's possible for us, to actually go visit.
I think also is we tend to forget that it's there. There's a lot of emphasis put on Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
And we forget that the territories in Yukon are right there too, and it's part of our country.
Yeah. We have, in the Maritimes, we have two of the Seven Wonders of Canada.
So, the rocks being one?
Well, the Fundy Tides.
The Fundy Tides, okay.
So I think that would probably encompass the rocks as well.
And I have no idea. Reversing Falls?
Cabot Trail.
Oh, Cabot Trail.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, as much as I have a great love for the beauty of our national parks, that's not the reason we're talking about this particular park today, but we're talking about it because of the legend and lore that surrounds it. According to Legends of Nahanni Valley, which is a little clip you can find on YouTube, centuries ago, the local Dene people would give this valley a wide berth. They considered it a bad place. On very rare occasions, like when famine was becoming a problem, the hunters would venture into the valley in search of food, but it was said that most of them would never be seen again. If a hunter actually made it back, they would have these wild stories of evil spirits that haunted the area, and would also talk about the presence of the Nakani, which were giants that would hunt anyone that entered the valley.
Some sort of giant. Relative of humans?
Maybe so. Given the ecosystem of the valley, there may have been reasons to defend it. Like, more than likely, food was abundant in that area, so they possibly didn't want people coming in. But for the Dene, it was not a place to go if you could at all avoid going to that area. In the late 1700s, Alexander Mackenzie and a crew of men would have been the first white men, I guess, on record to head out into that region of North America in search of furs, which is one of the reasons that Canada got explored the way it did. The local Dene and Inuits warned them about the fierce tribe known as the Nahanni and the dangers of the valley. Because of this expedition's exploration, new fur trading routes were opened up in the area, and the Hudson Bay Company moved in. Because furs were in very high demand, more and more exploration was taking place of the area, and the Dene would warn all of the explorers that would come through to avoid that area. They said that it was hostile to strangers, and they were warned to stay away from it.
And I'd venture to guess they didn't listen.
Yes and no. I think some people did stay away, and I think some people went through, but I suspect that the lore and the legend and the stories of the Dene were probably from centuries ago that was passed down, because I think what may have been happening when this history for them first developed would not have been the same as it was in the late 1700s, early 1800s. But that being said, in the 1830s, some of the fur traders that went to the area came back with stories of having encountered the feared Nahanni people. They said that the only reason they survived was the Nahanni leader was a woman, and they called her the White Queen, and because of her, she said to let them go. In the late 1800s, the area became a lot more popular. So this was around the time that gold was discovered in the Yukon and the gold rush started. Everyone was trying to strike it rich at the time. And we hear about the Yukon and the gold rush and the Klondike, but that wasn't actually the only place people were looking for gold. After the rush started dying down in the Yukon, prospectors set their sights on other parts of Canada in search of riches. Some of the men that were prospecting in the Northwest Territories would talk of finding this tropical valley hidden away in the Nahanni region. This kind of makes sense based on what we were talking about earlier with the orchids growing and the hot springs and all of that. So I can only imagine being in the Northwest Territories and then walking into like what would feel like a completely different world.
Well, it would almost be like going through a curtain and being on another part of the planet, really.
Yeah, I'm sure it felt like it was something otherworldly when it happened, when it was discovered by them. But even more than that, they would actually report having seen prehistoric animals like mammoths and mastodons in the area. And it's said, like, I don't know how official the record is, but you can read in certain articles that these men actually returned with ivory tusks. In 1904, two brothers named Willie and Fred McLeod headed to the Nahanni Valley from Alberta to search for gold. That first year, they returned home with gold in hand, so they decided to go back for a second expedition. The second one didn't end as well. They were never heard from again. About 3 years later, one of the other McLeod brothers headed out with a search party to try and find out what had happened to Fred and Willie. They ended up finding what they believe were their skeletal remains. Depending on what article you're reading, in one story they're saying that they were tied to the trees with their heads missing. And in another one, they said that they were sprawled on the banks of the river, like they'd just been woken up, they were making camp and were like suddenly awakened. But again, in this telling, the men were still headless.
So either one of the stories, they've lost their head.
Correct. The area where they were found became known as Dead Men Valley and the creek as Headless Creek, according to Fodors.com. There'd also been an engineer traveling with them, and he was never seen or heard from again. His remains were never found. Obviously, there was wild speculation about what could have happened to these men, but the mystery surrounding their death was never solved. This led to abundant rumors, and one of them being that the brothers had actually struck it rich when they were prospecting, and there was a lost area full of gold just waiting for someone to find it. After this, a lot of prospectors headed to the area, so I guess the interest in finding gold was much stronger than the worry about finding two men headless in the area.
Yeah, and I suppose once the story gets out that they think they found the bodies and they're headless and there's a missing engineer, so it's an easy jump from that to, oh, they must have struck it rich and the engineer may have killed them to keep the place secret. The
True.
Story would have spread real fast.
That's very possible. But what happened after that is men kept being found headless. So men were heading to the area to prospect for gold or whatever reason they were out there. And they kept being found headless, with often their cabins burnt down right next to them. For example, there was a prospector that was found in 1917. And again, he was found decapitated and he was found next to his burnt down cabin. There was another man that was found decapitated in his sleeping bag. And there are RCMP reports of this happening through the years. A lot of people also disappeared in the area. Now, the disappearances, I don't have a hard time kind of wrapping my head around. It's very rugged, remote. It doesn't take any time to get into trouble quickly if something happens. But the headless men is a little harder to explain.
Well, talking about headless bodies being found, you know, if there is stories of prehistoric animals in the area, an owl will eat a rabbit's head and leave the body there. So I'm just wondering if there was not some sort of animal that was just taking the heads.
Well, I mean, it's kind of a gory thing to talk about, but often anything that's sort of jointed, like if you find a body, you might be missing an arm or a leg because an animal made off with it, right? So
right.
I think the head is not usually a common one, but I guess it's not impossible. One of the popular theories, though, was that something happened to Willie and Fred originally. And then with the competition of the prospectors in the area, they were killing each other off. And just to keep that legend going so people would be afraid to head to the area and bring more competition, they would just keep beheading the men. So it may actually have been more than one person that was doing this, just killing off the competition. The gold rush, which is something we could do a whole other episode on, was not a happy time for a lot of people. There was a lot of violence that took place. So it's possible that they were just trying to kill off the competition and keep that fear going amongst people so they wouldn't come and try to find gold as well.
Well, anytime you hear a story about a major gold discovery or silver or whatever mineral, the miners that had placed their rights or their name on that mine, on that discovery, were really protective of it, and a lot of them would have shot anybody that come within shooting distance of their area.
Yeah.
It was a rough time. It was a very dangerous time.
So other than finding the headless men, the burned down cabins, or the legend that the Dene people would share, there's also a mountain range in the area called Funeral Range. And the reason for that is there's a lot of plane crashes that happen in that area. And that range borders Hell's Gate Rapids, which I think don't really need an explanation. So there is a lot of mystery. There's a lot of lore starting centuries ago surrounding the area. I think a big part of it is because it is so rugged, it is so remote. It is a place that you don't mess with nature because nature's going to win. So I think part of that lore is surrounding the remoteness and the dangers that just nature itself is bringing to the area.
I don't question any of the legends that the First Nations would have passed on, because their stories are based on actual events that have happened, and there's a certain teaching in that. So if they were trying to keep people in general away from that area, the elders probably had justifiable reasons to keep them away from there. Now, the other thing, you're talking about plane crashes. We've already said that it's its own ecosystem.
Yep.
So you could technically leave and head up that way and hit a major storm or fog or whatever. So there's a lot of explanations as to what it could be, but the other thing I find amazing is the talk about animals that were either prehistoric or we think are extinct. Every one of the provinces seems to have a story. Here it's the Eastern Cougar, so there could be some animals there also.
And because of the remoteness, they could easily sort of stay hidden from the 1,000 people that go through there every year, right?
Well, the group of people going through is not very big, but animals tend to be secretive.
Yeah.
And I know you've done a lot of hiking, and how many times have you walked through the woods and seen a skunk?
I've encountered a skunk up close twice in my life.
Walking in the woods?
No. Neither one of them was in the woods. Once it was in a field, crossing a field to get home, and once it was in like a park, like a picnic area.
Right. So all I'm trying to say is if you're hiking a remote trail in the woods, you're not going to run across a skunk unless there's a campground around or something like that. So it would be easy for us to say that skunks do not exist in the wild because we never see them when we go hiking. So there are animals out there, I'm sure, that are very secretive, and we just think they no longer exist because we don't see them.
Yeah, I'm not sure about mammoths. I feel like they would be a little bit harder to hide.
Yeah, I suppose. But if you're talking about Canada's Grand Canyon, there would be a lot of areas in there that haven't been explored.
And the other thing is, these men that were coming back saying that they'd seen these mammoths, or if they actually did come back with tusks, could have found like a carcass, right, of a dead animal and taken the tusk and then, like fishermen like to do, embellish their tail.
You're right. Well, when you were talking about hunters going into the area, the ones that did come back had quite a tale to tell. Well, I've been hunting for a long time, and my stories get bigger every year. So,
yeah, I think that's fairly typical of today's hunters.
Oh, I don't think it's new.
I think the legends and mysteries that we discussed today just add to the mystique of the place. I don't think it's a place that anyone who's ill-prepared should go into. And most of us, as people who just enjoy nature, we should probably go only with a guide or following very strict guidelines that the park has in place.
Yeah, it sounds like if it's a place for seasoned hikers.
Very seasoned outdoors people. And again, I think you would have to be extremely seasoned to venture out there without the aid of a guide that's familiar with the area. I also think that visiting the area would be a once-in-a-lifetime experience for any outdoor enthusiast who isn't too worried about encountering a headless ghost and is ready to respect the nature and the beauty of the area, but the dangers it can bring as well.
The area is so far away from everything. The communities are far and spread apart that anybody that ventures there has to understand that, you know, unless you've got a guide, you're on your own and you're going to get in trouble and help is not easier to come by. The other thing I just want to mention is that there are surely still Dene people in that area. And it's very important that any visitor respect their beliefs and their traditions if they are in that area.
For sure. I think it is good that the government is working with First Nations people in the area to make sure that they are respecting them as they are developing the park. I mean, we've talked about parks being developed before where the people of the area were not respected, and I think it's happened more times than we care to know about, but hopefully moving forward that will stop happening.
I think making the keepers of the land the keepers of the land in this instance is very important.
To finish up tonight with our moment of kindness, I actually want to mention a delivery driver who dropped off a package to my door on December 23rd. I can only imagine how busy and stressful their work is this time of year, but he knocked on my door and when I opened it, he was standing on the step and he didn't have the package with him. Had his uniform on and he said he was there to deliver the package, but he said, "I didn't want to bring it up because there's a picture of what's in the box on the box, and I didn't know if it was a Christmas gift, so I just wanted to check if it was okay that I bring it to the door. Do you want me to drop it off, right, like at the end of the driveway? What would you like me to do?" And I knew what was in there. It was something that I had ordered, and it wasn't a gift or anything like that. So I thought it was very nice of him to actually make the effort to try and not ruin a surprise if that's what it was for. And that meant he had to go back to his truck and get the package and come back. And imagining how many deliveries he probably had that day, I think he went above and beyond in his job just to try and make sure that if it was a gift that the surprise wouldn't be ruined for someone. So thank you for that effort.
Yeah, I think that's awesome, especially that he's been at it for weeks now and they've all been overwhelmed with deliveries. You know, it's an interesting story because you tend to see videos of delivery drivers just walking no farther than they need to get close enough so they can hit the door with the package and just keep going.
Yeah.
So this person really went out of their way, so that's great. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely did not do that. But once again, happy holidays to everyone. I hope you all got to spend time, maybe not directly with loved ones, but at least talking to them through the holidays. I hope everyone had enough food and warmth and joy to make the transition into 2021 manageable. I'll also take this occasion to wish everyone a happy new year, as our next episode will be coming out in 2021. Stay safe out there and have a good night.
Stay safe. Good night.